The hitch rails in front of the Verde Saloon were still full as Frank walked toward the place, so he knew that Sandine's men were still inside. In the rear corner of the room, Ed Sandine, Vern Riley, and Carl Lanigan still sat together. Riley and Lanigan looked surprised to see Frank, especially with a lawman's tin star pinned to his shirt. Sandine regarded him through narrow, contemplative eyes.
Since I seem to have everybody's attention, I'll go ahead and tell you that I've just accepted the job of marshal here in San Remo. That means there's law in this settlement again, and I expect it to be obeyed and respected.
You're not going to order us to give up our guns, are you, Marshal?
Not unless Mayor Donahue tells me to.
That old windbag! You've made a mistake by playing along with him, Morgan. This'll just cause more trouble.
No, as of now, there won't be any trouble in San Remo. I won't stand for it.
This is a damn joke. Imagine a gunslinger like Frank Morgan packing a badge. You're no town tamer, Morgan. You're just like us. We're the fellas the lawmen don't like.
Don't compare me to the likes of you, Lanigan.
Why?
Stop it, Carl. We don't want any trouble here tonight.
Maybe you don't. But it seems to me that Morgan does.
I just want everybody here to understand. Everybody, there won't be any gunfights or brawls in San Remo. If you run into lazy F-punchers on the street, let them go on past in peace. You're welcome in town as long as you conduct your business quietly.
Has anybody said that my men conduct themselves otherwise?
Not to my knowledge.
And do you intend to issue this warning to Howard Flynn and his men?
As a matter of fact, I do.
And I have no complaint, Marshal. As long as you treat us fairly, you won't have any trouble from us.
Speak for yourself, Sandine.
I speak for Saber. And the men who ride for me had damn well better listen when I speak.
Then maybe it's time I draw my pay and ride on. I won't let this bastard push me around. Morgan thinks he's got me buffaloed, but he's wrong.
If you don't like me, Lanigan, I'm willing to make an exception and settle it with you.
Now you're talking.
But not with guns. Tell you what I'll do. I'll take off this badge for a few minutes, and we'll step outside and settle this man to man.
You want to fight me? Hell, Morgan, I got 50 pounds on you. And I'm at least 10 years younger.
I'll take my chances.
Damn right you will. Man to man, just like you said.
The two men walked out of the saloon. Sandine walked to the door of the saloon so that he could watch the action.
All you Saber men, stay out of this. It's between Lanigan and Morgan.
Frank started out into the street. Twisting, Frank drove the heel of his hand up under Lanigan's bearded chin, forcing his head back. Frank came up on his hands and knees, and then surged to his feet just ahead of Lanigan. Frank stepped in and threw a hard right that caught Lanigan on the jaw. Frank was able to avoid most of Lanigan's punches, but one of them landed on his chest, and the other fist clipped him on the side of the head. Lanigan rushed in to finish off his opponent. Frank didn't give him a chance to recover. With a last-ditch effort, Carl reached out and grabbed Frank's shirt, then went over backward, pulling Frank with him. Instead of tugging against Lanigan, Frank suddenly went with him as the man tried to pull him in. He lowered his head and butted it into Lanigan's face. Frank pushed himself upright. Lanigan followed, but he was wobbly. Frank took advantage.
Say goodnight, son.
Sandine stepped out onto the boardwalk, looked at Lanigan's sprawled figure, and shook his head in disgust.
You boys, pick him up and put him on his horse. We'll take him back to Saber with us.
I thought he drew his time, Sandine.
Ah, that was just talk. Carl still works for me.
Better keep a tight rein on him.
Oh, I keep a tight rein on all my men. Until it's time to let him go.
With that, Sandine walked back into the saloon. Willard Donahue and Jasper Culverhouse came running over to Frank.
That was one hell of a fracas. Sandine and his men know you mean business now, Marshal.
I hope so.
Yeah, well, I got some liniment down at the barn you can soak those hands in, Marshal. It'll fix them right up. You'll be fine by morning.
I hope so.
After all the violence this day had brought with it, from the attack on the line shack to this grudge match in the street, Frank didn't like to think about what tomorrow might bring. Culver House was nowhere in sight when Frank woke up in his barn the next morning. Frank looked in on Stormy, who appeared to be fine, and rubbed Wolf's head as the big cur nuzzled his leg.
Stay here. I'll bring you back something to eat.
Frank left the barn and walked toward the cafe, eager to find out if Mary Elizabeth Warren's breakfasts were as good as the supper he'd had the night before. Willard Donahue was at one of the tables, along with Simon Wilson and Ben Desmond, the two merchants.
Come along and join us, Marshal. We thought you might be along.
How are you feeling, Marshal? A bit sore, I imagine.
Man, it'd have to be, Ben. Especially after a tussle like that one with Lanigan.
I'm fine. A little stiffer than usual, maybe. Nothing to worry about.
Lanigan won't forget what happened, you know. You better have eyes in the back of your head from now on, Marshal.
I got pretty good instincts. And why don't all of you call me Frank? I'm not much of one for standing on ceremony.
Well, all right, Frank. I imagine you do have good instincts to have lived this long. A man in your profession.
I didn't set out to make gunfighting my life's work. It just sort of happened that way.
Oh, of course. I didn't mean any offense.
None taken. You're absolutely right, Ben. I have to know when trouble's coming. Most of the time I do.
Mary Elizabeth brought over a cup of coffee and a plate stacked high with flapjacks, bacon, scrambled eggs, and hash brown potatoes.
You don't order breakfast here, Frank. You just eat what Mary Elizabeth brings you. If you're smart, that is.
Mighty kind of you.
You eat up and enjoy your meal, Marshal. You know it's on the house.
Not much obliged for that.
I tell you, Frank, this range war has really got this town just about blown over. Things might have been different if Laura Flynn had taken an interest in Sandine when he tried to court her. Might have postponed the trouble anyway. A couple of hombres as full of themselves as Flynn and Sandine likely would have butted heads sooner or later, no matter what else happened. But we'll never know, because Miss Laura wasn't interested. I reckon she's got her cap set for Jeff Buxton.
Flynn's foreman?
Yeah, she's fond of him, and I suspect he returns a feeling. Leastways, I've seen him making calf eyes at her when they were both in town and Miss Laura was shopping for supplies.
I hear she used to be a school teacher back east.
Yes, she talked about starting a school here, but there ain't enough children around to do it. Especially if you don't count the Delgado youngsters. None of them speak anything but Spanish, so Miss Laura would have a hard time teaching them.
How does Sandine get along with his other neighbors?
Pretty well, but there ain't all that many of them anymore. Sandine sort of gobbled up all the small spreads around him, except for a little bit here and there. The other ranches in the area all border the Lazy F.
The ranches that Sandine bought. Was there anything improper about the way he acquired them?
You mean did he force those other fellas to accept his offer at the point of a gun? Nobody could ever prove it if he did. And I don't know if he actually did that. But I know some water holes went bad and a few barns got burned. Those things happen, you know. Might have been pure coincidence that those ranchers decided to sell not so long afterward.
Has there been any trouble here in town between Sandine's men and Lazy F riders?
Yeah, a few ruckuses, but no real gunplay. One morning, one of Howard's punchers was found out behind the Verde Saloon, dead. He'd been stabbed in the back. He'd been in there the night before and won some money in a poker game, but his pockets were empty when his body was found. He could have been robbed and killed by a drifter. We have some of them come through here now and then.
Or he could have been killed by Sandine's men and robbed to make it look like they didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, it could have happened that way.
Who owns the Verde Saloon?
Sandine does. He bought it from the previous owner, a gambler named Ford Fargo, about a year ago.
That's interesting. So Sandine is a saloon keeper as well as a cattleman. He's making himself into a real power in these parts.
Yes, sir. He has a fellow named Mitch Kite who looks after the Verde for him. Sandine still spends most of his time out at Sabre, but it ain't uncommon to see him in town.
Do you think if things escalate into open warfare between Flynn and Sandine, it'll spill over into the settlement?
Well, how can it fail to? The businesses here all depend on Saber and the Lazy F. There'll be gunfights and God knows what else going on.
So, in order to really do my job of protecting the settlement, I have to make sure that Flynn and Sandine don't go to war against each other.
Well, there's an old saying about an irresistible force and an immovable object, Frank. That may be what you're up against here.
More like a rock in a hard place.
Whatever you call it, I got it to do.
You put Sandine on notice already. What's your next move, Frank?
Thought I'd ride out to the Lazy F, have a talk with Howard Flynn.
He won't be glad to see you.
Frank just smiled. That same morning, across the border in New Mexico territory, a man walked into a sleepy little cantina in a sleepy little village. Tall and lean, he had red hair and a raw-boned face and wore a black hat and a black frock coat. The drowsy man behind the makeshift bar looked up at the stranger and didn't recognize him as anybody who had ever passed through this nameless village.
Si, senor. What can I do for you?
Too early to get a drink?
The proprietor of the cantina, whose name was Rivas and who was the only one in the place at this hour, smiled.
Never too early for that, senor. Tequila? Pulque? Mezcal?
Don't you have any American booze?
I have whiskey.
I don't need the glass. Just give me the bottle.
If you want what's left in the bottle, senor, it'll cost you $2.
The stranger reached inside his coat, but instead of getting some money from his pocket, he brought out a small, well-thumbed little book bound in black leather. At first, Rivas thought it was a Bible, or at least a New Testament, but then the stranger rested it on the bar and opened it, and Rivas saw that some of the pages were blank and others were filled with rows of neat, precise writing. Again, the stranger reached inside his coat. This time, he took out a pencil.
What's your name, hombre?
Antonio Rivas.
Where were you born?
Across the border, in a village much like this one.
Did it have a name?
San Elizario.
How old are you? Do you know your birthday?
May the 10th. Are you going to pay me for the whiskey, senor?
In a minute. Are you married, Senor Rivas?
Si, of course. My wife, Carmen, is asleep in the back.
Young and pretty, is she?
Si. Muy bonita.
Oh, good. It's been a while since I've had a woman. I'll enjoy her.
I think you should leave now, senor. Take the bottle. I do not even care if you pay me.
Oh, I can't do that. Not yet. Not until after I've finished my business.
You are finished here, senor. Please go.
Well, I suppose I could. I've already talked to Mr. Talmadge down at the store, and he told me what I needed to know. He said that the man I'm looking for came through here about a week ago, riding west toward Arizona territory. That's enough. But somehow, even when I was through with Mr. Talmadge, I didn't feel like I was done here. Something was keeping me from riding on. And now, I know what it is. Now I know that I wasn't meant to leave here until I'd had me some fun with your pretty little wife, Senor Rivas.
The stranger's hand came up, and the early morning light flashed on something in it. The stranger came around the bar, wiped his blade on the dead man's shirt, and frowned when he saw that he had gotten blood on his cuffs. He had always been so fastidious in the past. Now that he was closing in on his quarry, he was getting eager, and that made him a little sloppy. He would have to get that under control before he caught up with Frank Morgan. Everything needed to be nice and neat when he killed Morgan. Just because people died didn't mean there had to be a mess. Frank took a couple of flapjacks and some ham fat back to the livery stable for Wolf. By the time he got there, Jasper Culverhouse was on hand, scooping grains from the bin into the troughs in the stalls that had horses in them.
Morning, Marshal. How are you today?
Not bad, considering. You might as well call me Frank. Told some of the other fellas in town, too.
Frank tossed one of the flapjacks to Wolf, who caught it deftly and wolfed it down.
Oh, been up to the cafe, have you?
That's right. Miss Warren's breakfasts are as good as her suppers.
You right about that. Reason I wasn't here earlier is that Pastor McCrory and I took the bodies of Jack Moses and the Hanley brothers up to the graveyard and planted them. Since you didn't want to put them on display, Homer and I didn't see any reason to drag our feet about the burying.
Anybody show up for the funeral?
Oh, hell, for gunmen like that? There ain't no mourners at those funerals. I didn't mean to.
It's all right, Jasper. When a fellow rides the trails I do, it is a lonely life. No getting around it. Man doesn't make many friends. Never stays in one place long enough to do that. When my time comes, I expect that service will be pretty sparsely attended, too. Could be just me and El Señor Dios.
Well, man could do worse.
Amen. Now, I reckon I'll get Stormy saddled up. I'm gonna take a ride out to the Lazy F.
Well, here, let me do that for you. That's a fine horse you got. We get along pretty well, but I'm glad you told him I was all right. I wouldn't try to ride him or even mess with him too much when you weren't around, that's for sure.
You'd regret it if you did.
When the horse was ready to ride, Frank swung up into the saddle.
I'll see you later, Jasper.
Culverhouse lifted a hand in farewell as Frank rode out of the barn. As he reached the range claimed by Howard Flynn, he began to see cattle bearing the rancher's brand. Frank estimated that he was only a couple of miles from the Lazy F ranch house when he saw a rider coming toward him. He had expected to run into some of Flynn's punchers before now. But as this rider trotted along the trail toward him, he realized in surprise that the approaching figure wasn't one of Flynn's cowboys at all. Instead, it was the cattleman's niece, Laura.
Miss Flynn, good morning.
Mr. Morgan, what are you doing out here?
Then, before he could answer, her gaze stopped on the badge pinned to Frank's shirt.
Oh my goodness, you're a lawman.
Freshly minted. The mayor of San Remo offered me the job of marshal. And I took it.
Willard Donahue was a disreputable old windbag. I'm not sure he was ever legally elected mayor. From what I gather, he just started calling himself that, and everyone went along with it to humor him.
Maybe so, but the other folks in the settlement seemed agreeable to the idea of me being the marshal, so I reckon it's official enough. Mary Elizabeth Warren is even feeding me for free as part of my wages for the job.
Mary Elizabeth is a wonderful woman. I hope that Caleb will be able to talk her into marrying him one of these days.
So that she can come out here and cook for your uncle?
No, so that she and Caleb will be happy, of course. But being able to eat Mary Elizabeth's cooking more often than just when we go into town would be nice, too. And I don't mind admitting that I'm not one of those dainty, delicate Eastern ladies who pretends she doesn't like to eat. I might have been like that once, but the West is growing on me, I suppose.
It has a way of doing that to folks.
You still haven't told me what you're doing out here, Mr. Morgan. Or should I call you Marshal Morgan?
Why not make it frank? As for what I'm doing here, I'm on my way to see your uncle and have a talk with him.
A talk about what?
Well, since I've been hired to keep the peace in San Remo, it seems to me that the best way of doing that is to persuade your uncle and Ed Sandine to give up the idea of a range war between them. Nobody really wins in one of those things. I know, I've been involved with them before. They just lead to a lot of bloodshed that doesn't solve anything.
I don't really see that what happens between Edward and my uncle is any of your business, Marshal. You don't have any jurisdiction except in San Remo.
That's true. But what happens out here on the range has an effect on the settlement. Violence has a way of spreading.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. But the man you need to talk to is Edward Sandine, not my uncle. He's the one who's stirring up trouble.
Because you turned him away when he came courting?
Who told you that?
More than one person. Isn't it true?
I won't deny that Edward expressed a romantic interest in me. I even considered his suit for a short time. I'm an educated woman, Marshal. I thought at first that Edward was a man of breeding and culture. He has the ability to make it seem like he is.
You can put a suit on a polecat, but he's still a polecat.
I'm not sure I would have phrased it quite so bluntly, but it didn't take me long to realize that I didn't want to become romantically involved with Edward Sandine. Out here, most people consider me an old maid, you know. but I'd rather be thought of that way than to become involved with the wrong man.
Sounds pretty wise to me. I'm a mite surprised to find you out here riding by yourself this way.
I'm armed.
Can you use that rifle?
Of course. Well, at least to a certain extent. I've been practicing. Mr. Buxton is teaching me how to shoot.
From what I saw him yesterday, Buxton seems a pretty good fella.
He's a fine man. A bit unlettered, of course, but a true gentleman at heart. A diamond in the rough, you might say.
Well, sounds like you're fond of him.
And why shouldn't I be?
No reason that I know of. I was just thinking that if a war breaks out between your uncle and Sandine, Buxton will be right in the middle of it. As foreman of the Lazy F, he'll be a prime target for any gunman who wants to curry favor with Sandine.
You think so?
I know so. Like I said, I've seen it before. Each side starts killing off the other, and it goes on until sometimes there's hardly anybody left to fight. It's usually how it ends, with a lot of death on both sides.
Maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea for me to have a talk with Uncle Howard. I don't really feel that I have a right to tell him what to do, though. He's been very kind to me. He took me in and gave me a place to live when he didn't really have to.
In that case, I'm sure you don't want anything happening to him either.
Certainly not. I'll do what I can to help you, Marshal. And I'll start by riding with you to the ranch house. It's probably not all that safe for you to be approaching the Lazy F by yourself today. Some of the men still hold a grudge against you because of what happened to Mr. Crenshaw and Mr. Houlihan.
That gunfight wasn't my idea. Those two hot-headed young punchers started shooting. Didn't give me any choice but to defend myself.
I know that.
They began riding at an easy pace along the trail, side by side.
Mr. Buxton explained the whole thing to me, but that doesn't change the hard feelings that some of the men have toward you.
Oh, I reckon it doesn't.
Frank glanced over and saw the late morning sunlight reflect off something in the trees. Frank kicked his feet free of the stirrups and left Stormy's back in a dive that sent him toward Laura. Frank surged to his feet, hauling the shocked woman with him.
Run! Head for the trees!
Frank saw a bloodstain appear on the sleeve of Laura's shirt. She was hit, but the wound didn't look too bad. Maybe just a graze. The pair entered the growth of pines, and Frank slid to the ground and pulled Laura down too.
Stay down as low as you can. Take it easy. You can't see us. And among these trees like this, you'll have to be mighty lucky to hit either of us.
Who is it? Who's trying to kill us?
Dunno. How bad is your arm hurt?
I'm not sure. All I know is that it burns and aches terribly.
We'll get you taken care of real soon now.
Are we going to die, Marshal Morgan?
Not hardly. In fact, I think that bushwhacker's gone. We'd better wait a few minutes before we move, though, just in case he's trying to lure us out in the open where he can take another shot at us.
If Frank had been alone, he would have stayed where he was for at least another quarter of an hour, just to make sure the silence wasn't a trick. He didn't think he could afford to do that, though, what with Laura being hurt and all. After about 5 minutes, he holstered his gun and scooted over to where she lay.
Let me look at that arm.
As he had thought, the bullet had barely clipped her, leaving a shallow trench a couple of inches long in her upper arm. Blood still oozed from it, but the flow had slowed considerably.
You're gonna be fine.
Frank tore a strip off the shirt sleeve and tied it around the wound.
That'll hold you until we can get you back to the ranch. Is there a doctor in San Remo? I don't recall any mention of one.
No. The nearest doctor is in Prescott.
No matter. I bet your uncle has plenty of experience at patching up bullet wounds. If he can't take care of this, maybe the cook can. Or, for that matter, I can do it myself, as long as I got a bottle of whiskey and some clean cloth.
This doesn't seem like the proper time for a drink.
You'd be surprised. Slug of whiskey would likely make you feel a little better right about now. Come on.
Is it safe?
I haven't been any shots for several minutes now, and I'm pretty sure I heard the bushwhacker riding off. Chances are your uncle or some of his men will be showing up any minute now. Try to find out what all the commotion is about.
Frank helped her to her feet. The two horses were still there. By now, they had drifted over to the far side of the trail and were cropping at the grass growing there. Frank turned towards the ranch, and he saw a rider sweep around a bend in the trail and gallop toward them. The strap of the rider's hat was taut under his chin, and the swiftness of his passage pushed the brim up. As the man caught sight of Frank and Laura, he leaned forward in the saddle, raked his mount with his spurs, and raced toward them even faster. Frank recognized the rugged, mustachioed face of Howard Flynn's foreman, Jeff Buxton.
Hang on to the stirrup for a minute until your head settles down. Then I'll help you get mounted.
Frank turned away from her and stepped out into the trail, lifting a hand in greeting to Buxton. Frank expected the rider to slow down, but Buxton kept coming at a breakneck pace. By the time Frank realized that Buxton intended to ride him down, it was almost too late.
What the hell? Buxton, have you gone?
Frank intended to say crazy, but he didn't get the chance. Buxton had yanked his horse to a sliding, skidding halt and was already out of the saddle.
Stop it, you damn fool! Damn it, Buxton, settle down! I didn't hurt her!
Die, you bastard!
Enough was damned well enough. Buxton was driven down to one knee by the blow. Frank could have kicked him in the face then, but he wasn't the sort of hombre who would kick a man when he was down. That hesitation gave Buxton the chance he needed.
Stop it! Stop hurting him!
You better put that rifle down, Miss Flynn. You might shoot somebody without meaning to.
If you hurt Jeff again, I'll mean to shoot you, all right? Stand up and get away from him!
Buxton misunderstood what he saw when he rode up. He thought I was the one who had hurt you. I tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen.
I know. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Morgan, but I still can't let you hurt him anymore.
I don't reckon you have to worry about that.
Frank looked along the trail and saw half a dozen more riders come tearing around the bend. The big white-haired figure in the lead was unmistakably Howard Flynn. Flynn's deep-set blue-gray eyes took in the scene rapidly. He drew the pistol at his hip, leveling it at Frank and earing back the hammer. The men with him followed suit.
You done good, Laura. Mighty good, in fact. Get mounted up and ride on back to the ranch now, fast as you can. AC Ducey will tend to your arm.
What are you going to do?
We're gonna give this damned gunfighter his needings once and for all. That's what we're gonna do.
Maybe I haven't noticed. That's a marshal's badge pinned to my chest.
I see it. Where'd you steal it, gunfighter?
It's not stolen. The citizens of San Remo gave it to me. I'm working for them now.
You're the marshal of San Remo now? A man like you?
Hell of a note, isn't it?
Uncle Howard, you've got to listen to me. Mr. Morgan didn't hurt me. Someone shot at us. If anything, Mr. Morgan saved my life.
What about Buxton? Looks to me like Morgan jumped him.
The other way around. Buxton rode up and jumped to the same conclusion you did, Flynn. He thought I was responsible for your niece being hurt, so he tried to ride me down and then attacked me.
Flynn looked at Laura, who nodded.
That's the way it happened. I fired a shot into the air to break up the fight because I didn't want Mr. Buxton to be hurt badly. But Mr. Morgan is telling the truth.
I still ain't sure about that part.
Flynn lowered the hammer on his gun and slid the iron back into leather. Once again, the men with him followed his example.
All right, Morgan. I'm a big enough man to admit it when I was wrong. Don't expect me to apologize, though.
I wasn't planning on holding my breath.
How bad are you hurt, Laura?
Not bad. Marshal Morgan can tell you. He bandaged it.
You did that?
Of course. Somebody bushwhacked us from that knoll over there. Miss Laura got nicked by one of the bullets. But it just needs to be cleaned up and it should be fine.
Bushwhacked, eh? You see who done it?
Didn't even get a glimpse of him.
Maybe it was a trick, boss. Maybe it was one of Morgan's outlaw pards doing the shooting to make him look good by saving Miss Laura.
And what would the purpose of that be?
Get me to trust you, maybe? So you could get close enough to kill me and collect your payoff from Ed Sandine?
I'm close enough to kill you now, Flynn.
Yeah, but you'd never get away from my boys.
Don't be too sure of that. We're wasting time. You need to get Miss Laura back to the house so that wound can be tended to properly.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right, fellas. A couple of you help Buck get on his horse. Looks like Morgan wailed a tar out of him.
I'm all right, damn it.
Somewhat shakily, Buxton managed to get his foot in the stirrup, grasp the saddle horn, and swing up into his saddle.
Where in blazes you going?
With you. I rode out here to talk to you, and I intend to do it.
Even if I don't want you setting foot on my land?
I'm stubborn.
As if I hadn't noticed. Well, come on then. No point in sitting around here jawing.
The group of riders moved off toward the ranch house. Frank brought his horse alongside Flynn's.
I reckon you heard the shooting and rode out to see what was going on.
That's right. Buck got there first because he was already part of the way in this direction, I guess. You didn't have to beat the hell out of him.
I did if I wanted to make him listen to me. He was the one who called the tune.
Yeah, well, it may wind up being one you don't want to dance to. Do you think that bushwhacker you told us about was shooting at you or at Laura?
I'm fairly certain they were shooting at me, but there's no way to be sure.
The group came in sight of the ranch headquarters and reached the big house a few minutes later. Flynn had sent one of his men galloping ahead to alert the cook to the fact that Laura had been wounded. AC Ducey was waiting for them on the porch when they rode up. He rushed down the steps and hurried to Laura's side, where he helped her dismount and held on to her good arm as they went into the house. Flynn dismissed the other punchers with a flick of his hand, then turned to Frank.
Let's sit out here on the porch. If you got something to say to me, you can say it there.
Don't want me in your house, huh?
Let's just say I don't have much use for gunslingers. I never caught into your kind, Morgan.
There were several old ladder-back chairs on the porch. Flynn sat down in one, and Frank picked up one of the chairs and turned it around so that he could straddle it and rest his arms on the back.
Laura told me that Willard Donahue wasn't ever elected the mayor of San Remo.
That's true. So if Donahue's the one who gave you that badge, I ain't sure if calling yourself a marshal's exactly legal.
Everyone else in the settlement went along with it, so I reckon it's legal enough.
Yeah, do what you want. Don't make no never mind to me.
I'm going to proceed as if I'm the duly appointed marshal of San Remo. That means that if you or any of your men try to start trouble in town, I'll do my best to stop it.
Why don't you go warn Sandine? He's the one causing all the trouble.
I did warn him last night, which makes me wonder if whoever fired those shots at your niece and me this morning works for him.
If you've already had a run-in with Sandine, he sure might have sent somebody after you. There's sure as hell no shortage of back shooters and cold deck killers on Sabre to choose from for a job like that.
That's pretty much what I thought. I'm told that one of your punchers was murdered in town not long ago.
Yeah, Joe Harrington. Pretty good kid, just a little wild and careless. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been playing poker in the Verde Saloon without any other lazy F men around. The story was that some drifter robbed and killed him, but I never believed that. Sandine was responsible. He saw a chance to get rid of one of my boys and took it.
We're in agreement on that, too. But you didn't try to strike back at Sandine for it.
Didn't have any proof, and I like to think I'm a fair man. It ain't like what happened yesterday. Ruth Blake told you before he died that Sandine's men were behind that. That's good enough for me.
But Blake and Bragan and Wardell were all inside the line shack when the shooting started. A shot came through the window and killed Wardell. Blake and Bragan were pinned down in there until the shack was set on fire. They were shot when the flames drove them out. That means they never really got a good look at who killed them.
Damn it, are you saying maybe it wasn't Sandine?
I'm saying you can't prove that either. Personally, I believe that Sandine ordered the shack burned and your men killed. I spoke to him in the settlement last night, and I didn't like the looks of him. But if you want to be fair, you can't take action against Sandine based on what happened yesterday.
Now maybe you'd rather I wait until the bastard's got a gun to my head. It'll be too damn late then.
Well, you got a point there. Here's what I suggest. Keep your men close to home for a while. Don't let them go into San Remo and stir up trouble. I'll poke around some and see what I can find out. Maybe get you the proof you need to go to the authorities.
I've been stumping my own snakes for 40 years.
I know, and I understand how you feel. I'm just trying to keep this trouble from boiling over and spreading bloodshed all over the range.
You're a fine one to talk, Morgan, considering how much blood you've shed over the years.
I know. Maybe I'm trying to make up for some of that.
Atoning for your sins, eh? Been my experience that don't really work.
Mine too. But I figure it doesn't hurt anything to give it a try.
All right, Morgan. I'll play it your way, for now. My riders will steer clear of San Remo. But if you come up with the proof that Sandine is behind those killings, well, I make no promise what I'll do then.
Fair enough.
Grub ought to be ready soon. Come on in and eat with us.
Well, your opinion of me must have gone up a little. for you to invite me in and sit at your table.
Yeah, well, nobody's ever going to say that Howard Flynn ain't hospitable, even to low-down gunfighters.
The cook had cleaned and bandaged the wound on Laura's arm, and she had changed from her riding clothes into a simple but attractive dress. Her face was still pale and drawn from the pain, though, as she sat down at the table in the ranch house dining room with her uncle and Frank.
How you feeling, Laura?
I'll be all right.
We can hitch up the wagon and take you over to Prescott to see a real Sawbones.
No, I'm sure that won't be necessary. AC Ducey did a fine job of cleaning and dressing the wound.
Just keep an eye on it. I think it'll heal all right.
You'd know about bullet wounds, wouldn't you, Morgan?
I suspect you've been nicked a few times yourself.
Yeah, you're right about that. Now, dig in. A Chinaman ain't as good a cook as that colored woman in town, but his food ain't bad.
Frank found that he agreed with that assessment. The steak that AC Ducey served him wasn't quite as tender and flavorful as the one he'd had in Mary Elizabeth Warren's cafe the night before, but it was still more than passable. When they had finished eating, Frank said his goodbyes to Flynn and Laura and went outside. Flynn followed him onto the porch.
Don't be too long about that poking around you're planning on doing, Morgan. I'll only wait so long before I take my men over to Sandine's and clean out that nest of vipers.
I'll be in touch.
With that, Frank walked to Stormy and swung up into the saddle and turned toward the west.
Morgan?
Frank looked toward the bunkhouse and saw Jeff Buxton striding in his direction.
What do you want, Buxton?
I know you weren't the one who hurt Miss Flynn, Morgan. Reckon I jumped the gun on that. Sorry.
Fair enough.
That don't mean there's no hard feelings, though. You and me left things unsettled between us, and it can't end like that.
They seem pretty settled to me.
Just heed what I'm saying. Sooner or later, you and me will have it out, Morgan.
That's a fight I don't want.
It's one you'll have, like it or not.
It'll be up to you to start the ball, then, whenever you're ready.
You'll know when the time comes. I ain't no bushwhacker or back shooter.
Never thought you were.
We understand each other, then.
The sun was about to dip behind the mountains to the west by the time Frank reached the settlement. He rode across the plank bridge and went to the livery barn behind the blacksmith shop. Culverhouse came out of the blacksmith shop and took Stormy's reins.
I'll put him up for you, Marshal. Give him a good rub down, too.
I'm much obliged, Jasper. Quiet day around here?
Yeah. A few of Sandine's men rode by a while ago and went to the saloon, but I haven't seen any lazy F riders, so they ain't been any trouble.
I had a good talk with Flynn. Gonna keep his men out of town for the time being. That should let things quiet down a little.
Huh. I'm surprised you got Flynn to go along with that. He's a stiff-necked old pelican. Thinks he's always right.
Since it was nearly dark, Frank walked along to the cafe. Not surprisingly, he found Willard Donahue outside, apparently waiting for him.
Evening, Marshal. Haven't seen you around since early this morning. Did you take that ride out to Howard Flynn's ranch?
I did. I explained to him that I'm the Marshal of San Remo now, and I told him there wouldn't be any trouble tolerated in this town.
How'd he take that?
Well, he cast aspersions on the legality of this badge I'm wearing. He said you appointed yourself mayor rather than being elected.
He did he? I reckon it's true there wasn't exactly an election, but everybody in town thought we needed a mayor, and nobody objected when I said I'd take the job. That makes it legal enough as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. You had supper yet?
Nope. Waiting for you.
Let's go on inside then. It's been a long day.
Over supper, Frank told Donahue everything that had happened, including the bushwhacking, the wounding of Laura Flynn, and the fight with Buxton.
Will that young woman be all right?
I think so. Wasn't much more than a scratch. Of course, it seemed worse to her since she's not used to being shot at.
And you are.
Yeah, it seems to happen a lot. Not saying I like it, but that's just the facts of the matter.
Do you really intend to bring in outside authorities if you can prove that Sandine is behind the attacks on Flynn's spread?
It's the only way this thing will truly be settled, short of open warfare. I know you said there are jurisdictional problems, but I'll drag the sheriffs of all three counties involved in here if I have to.
It wouldn't break my heart to see Ed Sandine behind bars, that's for damn sure. I don't see how you're going to get that proof you want, though. Unless you can lay your hands on one of Sandine's men and convince him to testify against his boss.
That's the very idea that's been lurking in the back of my head. I have to make one of them talk.
I don't know how in blazes you manage that. All the men who ride for Saber are mighty tough.
Any man's liable to turn on his boss, though, if it's the only way he can save his own neck.
How do you mean?
Sandine wants me dead. He's gonna keep sending men after me. I just need to take one of them alive, so that he's faced with either testifying against Sandine or going to the gallows for trying to kill me.
Just trying to kill somebody ain't usually a hanging offense. You got to actually commit murder to get your neck stretched.
I think I can convince a prisoner otherwise.
You know, I think you're right, Frank. If you told me I had a date with the hangman, I expect I'd believe you. The only problem with this plan is that you got to sit back and wait for somebody who works for Sandine to try again to kill you. That's just like painting a damn target on your back.
Won't be the first time I ever worn one.
After dinner, Frank walked toward Alonzo Hightower's Muggy-owned saloon, intending to stop in there for a quick beer before he went back to the livery barn. Frank heard the faint noise in the shadows as he passed the mouth of the alley between Wilson's Mercantile and Vicente Delgado's saddle shop, and his muscles stiffened and his nerves cried out for him to draw his gun and whirl toward the darkness, ready to fire. He did neither of those things, but instead just kept walking. Frank threw himself to the side and rolled on the ground. The peacemaker leapt into his hand as Frank came to a stop on his belly. Frank surged to his feet and leaped onto the boardwalk in front of the saddle shop. He pressed his back against the wall of the building. The bushwhacker had reached the horse he had left hidden somewhere behind the buildings. Frank bit back a curse, whirled around, and dashed out of the alley and along the street. He had only one slim chance of stopping the gunman. The bridge over the Verde was the only good place to cross the river for several miles in either direction. If the bushwhacker rode past the bridge and continued north along the river, he would get away. Frank wouldn't be able to catch him, but if he tried to cross the bridge, Frank might be able to stop him. It would be a difficult shot, in poor light, at long range for a handgun. The rider bolted out from between Desmond's store and the Baptist church at the north end of town. Leaning low over the horse's neck, he galloped toward the bridge. Frank came to a stop in the street, leveled the pistol, and steadied his arm by gripping his right wrist with his left hand. Frank managed to hit the rider's horse, and as soon as it went down and threw its rider, Frank spread it forward again. When he reached it, he saw the horse lying there, motionless, but there was no sign of the fallen bushwhacker. There was an open railing on each side of the bridge. It would have been simple enough for the bushwhacker to slide through there. And there were support beams underneath the bridge, Frank recalled, where a man could stand. A flicker of movement to the left caught his attention. Frank realized that the bushwhacker was hidden underneath the bridge, just as he had suspected. The only cover out here was the corpse of the dead horse. Frank crawled behind it. Frank listened intently and heard a scraping sound somewhere below him. The bushwhacker was on the move, trying to work his way around to a better position where he could get a decent shot at his intended target. Acting on instinct, Frank rolled out from behind the carcass and reached the edge of the bridge. Cedar posts, spaced every 8 feet or so, supported the railings along the sides. With his left hand, Frank grabbed one of them at the bottom where it was nailed to the bridge, clamping his fingers around it in a grip of iron. Then he continued rolling and dropped off the side of the bridge. Frank dangled there, his keen eyes searching the shadows under the bridge. He saw a deeper patch of darkness perched in the support beams about a dozen feet away and took aim. Then Frank couldn't hold on anymore. His grip gave way and he fell. Frank surged out of the water and sprawled on the bank. Despite being chilled, he knew he couldn't just lie there. He had no idea whether the bushwhacker was still alive, but it was certainly possible that the man was not only alive, but still bent on killing his quarry. Frank scrambled upright and looked along both banks of the river. The newly risen moon and the stars that had popped out in the arching black vault of the sky gave enough light so that he could see fairly well. He spotted movement on the same side of the river, on the far side of the bridge. And after a second, that movement resolved itself into the shape of a man stumbling away. Frank had caught enough of a glimpse of the man's face that he was reasonably certain the bushwhacker was Carl Lanigan. Frank drew closer, his long legs flashing now as he ran at top speed.
Morgan! You bastard!
Lanigan stopped short. Frank, who was moving considerably faster than the stocky Lanigan, couldn't slow his momentum in time. Lanigan dropped down and flung himself at Frank's legs. Frank slammed into the ground, rolled over, and came to a stop on his back. As he looked up, Lanigan's bulk blotted out some of the stars as the man loomed over him. Frank saw the glint of starlight on the knife in Lanigan's upraised hand. As Lanigan dove at him, Frank jerked his feet up and planted his boots in Lanigan's stomach. Lanigan lay a few feet away, apparently stunned. Frank's hand went to his Colt.
Don't move, you son of a bitch. It's all over. You're under arrest, Lanigan.
The man still didn't move. Wary of a trick, Frank approached him carefully. The handle of the knife Lanigan had tried to use on Frank stood straight up from his chest. The blade was buried deep inside his body. Obviously, he had fallen on it when he landed.
Lanigan! Lanigan, can you hear me?
Damn you! Morgan!
Looks like you're on your way out, Lanigan. Did Sandine send you after me? Don't let him get away with it, Lanigan.
Go to hell!
That's where you're headed. If it was Sandine's fault, he ought to be keeping you company, shouldn't he?
Frank heard people moving through the grass behind him. He didn't dare take his attention off Lanigan because the man might admit to Sandine's involvement at any second. Anyway, Frank knew the people who were approaching were probably some of the townspeople from San Remo.
You bastard! Morgan!
Marshal! Marshal, is that you? You all right?
I'm fine, Jasper.
Frank turned to look at the group of men who had come up. He recognized Culverhouse, Willard Donahue, and a couple of the saloon keepers.
Too bad I can't say the same for Lanigan.
He's dead?
He's dead.
Frank's clothes were soaked. He hoped he wouldn't catch a chill from that as he trudged back to the settlement with the other men. Culverhouse was going to fetch his cart and bring Lanigan's body back to the blacksmith shop.
Somebody will have to let Sandine know what happened. Since Lanigan worked for him, Sandine may want to pay for the burying, but otherwise I guess I'll just take whatever's in Lanigan's pockets.
Sorry I had to shoot his horse. If I hadn't, you could claim it.
I ain't in the burying business to get rich. Just something's got to be done, and most folks don't want to have anything to do with it.
I may need some of that liniment of yours for my shoulder. Feels like I almost jerked the arm out of its socket.
Got plenty of it. Hey, does trouble always follow you around like this, Frank?
Seems like it.